Well, last week it was the Seraph Brass, and the time before that, Sitar Virtuoso, Arjun Verma. But the Bullock Performance Institute series continues this evening with a performance by the Lafayette String Quartet. And I have three of the four members of the quartet here in the studio. Let me coordinate the... Anne, you are reaching for the correct one for you, and Joanne, you should grab that microphone. And I'll just say hello, ladies.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let's tell listeners right away, your performance begins at 7:30 tonight in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's a ticketed event. You can buy tickets at the door or in advance through the Miller Auditorium box office. That's 387-2300 or Miller Auditorium. .com. The Lafayette String Quartet will also be joined by faculty pianist at Western, Lori Sims. So we have a lot of great music to preview and just about 20 minutes of time to get to know the Lafayette String Quartet. So let's begin the story with where and why you formed the group. Start with Joanne.
I like to say we were born in Bloomington, Indiana. When we were in grad school, we were raised in Detroit, Michigan, and we now live in Victoria, British Columbia, and teaching at the University of Victoria.
University of Victoria in British Columbia.
That's right.
Otherwise known as Paradise.
It's kind of like Paradise, yeah.
So the work that you put into it, how long has this ensemble been around? Did I miss that?
Well, we've been together, the same four women, for 33 years.
That's remarkable.
It's
that's
crazy.
That's our professional time we've been together. We've actually, my three colleagues, Sharon, Joanna, and Pam, met at Indiana University in 1983, formed a quartet there with their teacher, Dubinsky, Rostislav Dubinsky of the Borodin Quartet, worked on an entire program of music with him, and consequently... From that initial beginning, that birth of the quartet, it was Dubinsky who said, you know, girls, you should keep the quartet. Keep the quartet. And so they went looking for another first violinist because he wasn't going to leave his position at Indiana University. So we all got a job in a chamber orchestra in Detroit. So we really grew up as a quartet here in Michigan.
That's amazing.
Yes.
And we're named after Lafayette Avenue in Detroit, Michigan.
In Detroit. I know there's a lot of Lafayettes around.
Yes, but, every city has a Lafayette Street.
Because Anne and I used to live in Lafayette Towers, and we'd get off the highway on Lafayette Avenue, and we were trying to find a name, and that was it.
Sharon, your second violinist, do you switch back and forth?
We do not. No.
You stay
no.
With the second.
I've been a second violinist for 33 years.
You know that inside and
she's
out.
The best.
What kind of challenges did you set for yourself early on? What was
On competitions, you know, young groups set those sorts of things up because it's a good way to build repertoire. You know, your repertoire is kind of chosen for you. And it's usually repertoire that shows the technical and musical skills of a quartet. So we set that goal up pretty quickly, and we did pretty well in competitions. That was what helped us get concerts initially, was doing well in those.
It actually helped us get our manager, too. So that helped us in our career along the way.
Have you had a manager for over 30, 20 years?
We've had several managers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
And also we established a residency at the Institute of Music and Dance in Detroit. And that was something that was a cornerstone for our beginnings, as well as working at Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan.
Oh, wow. Well, I love this story.
So because, it's kind of, it feels like, oh, we're back at our beginnings now.
Yeah.
So,
Currently, are you on a tour? Have you been through the States or through Canada the last few weeks?
Well, we started in Bloomington, and we ended up in Ontario, and then came here for the end of our tour.
Again, the concert is tonight at 7:30. Let's have a look at some of the pieces on the program. You, as a quartet, will take the first half of the concert to yourselves with some amazing pieces by, you couldn't find better quartet writers.
Ludwig van Beethoven. Two guys who have great cycles.
Yeah. Dmitri Shostakovich. Yeah. How many? 15?
15, and we've played all of them. For our 30th anniversary, we decided to do the entire Shostakovich cycle. It was a big, it's a big goal for us. We've done the Beethoven cycle a few times, but to be able to do the Shostakovich cycle and to really explore his life through his quartets was a tremendous privilege for us. And we had, my colleagues and I had worked with Dubinsky very closely, as we had said earlier, at Indiana, and he was a close associate of Shostakovich. And so the insights that he shared with us in his quartets was quite extraordinary. We also, Sharon and I, took a trip down to visit his widow in Indiana before we did the cycle. And so we were able to gather his editings and his musical sort of inner workings of the quartets. And we brought those back and studied them.
He had notes on the quartet?
Yes, he not only had notes, he had performed all but the last two with the Borodin Quartet. Mm. And of course, Shostakovich working so intimately with him, we felt like we had the composer's sort of inside.
His own thoughts, yes. Yeah.
And when you have the manuscript of the parts, he had the parts, there are bowings and fingerings and certain ways that Dubinsky edited Shostakovich's quartets. So it was an insight into how Dubinsky was seeing those quartets as well. It was great.
I don't want this question to seem terribly ignorant, but I can't.
I might not be able to know that.
It's just that, you know, I don't always play a lot of Shostakovich and the quartets because they're so intense. Mm-hmm. They bring up emotions that aren't something I necessarily want to deal with at the moment. Yeah. I can't imagine being so close to his ideas and his thought process and working on all 15 of the quartets in a cycle, how much did that influence you at the time?
Well, I think we were also immersing ourselves in books written about the Soviet Union at that time and books written about Shostakovich, and it put you in a different place, that's for sure. I kind of felt more akin to his feelings in my everyday life. It was definitely intense and dark and moody.
This is Joanna Hood, the violist.
The dark and moody Joanna Hood. Yeah. Just ask these guys. No. But going from the first quartet to the last quartet, there's a big evolution in his writing, which I don't think I would have appreciated quite as much without experiencing that timeline.
Yes. I agree with Joanna. His music is intense. You're right, Kara. But it's also extremely beautiful. He doesn't leave you in this horror without giving you light. He really does see that beautiful, the beauty in life. And it is exquisite when he does that.
I mean, with one chord, he can change the gloom into such a beacon of hope. And it is really, sometimes it is often just on one chord and you think, oh, it's life is still worth living.
Yeah,
it's incredible music.
It is intense music, and it is beautiful, but it's extremely beautiful music.
Yeah.
So I think for our time, I mean, music is one of those things that we're living in the moment. It's true mindfulness, in a sense, when you go to a concert. We're trying to practice this more in our life, right? And I think in moments like this, in times that we have now, music is the way for us to really allow ourselves that emotion, and then it's okay. We've been there, and we can leave it. We don't have to take it with us.
This is Anne Elliott Goldschmidt of the Lafayette String Quartet, first violinist, and has been for 33 years. So many of these pieces have cycled through your seasons over and over again, I imagine. And I, even though you're the same personnel, people change from season to season, I think. Is it possible to just feel like the pieces are brand new again, fresh approaches every time?
Oh, just yesterday evening, we were rehearsing with Laurie Sims, and we've played the Schumann Quintet a lot with, you know, various pianists, but we came up with a new way of ending the last page. And it's a whole new shape, and we tried it. I think it was Pam's idea, our cellist. And we tried it on and worked it a bit, and after a while we said, oh, I like this idea. Let's do it tomorrow night. Let's do it.
There you go.
Yes.
Problem solved.
Yeah, and I mean, we've done it a different way other years, and so tonight you're going to hear something a little bit different.
Well, tonight you're going to hear a Shostakovich Quartet in A-flat, Opus 118. And you haven't given me the number on that, so
it's number 10.
It's number 10.
Okay, mm-hmm. A mature quartet. And you're starting with Beethoven. I'd like to talk about the Beethoven in a little minute, but since we have a commercial recording of the Lafayette String Quartet with Shostakovich number 3, mm-hmm. Let's get a taste of the Shostakovich playing. 5 movements here. Any particular choice that would make
well,
sense?
Well, this third quartet is it's a real evolution. I would say maybe the second movement is the start of the clouds are coming in and the storm clouds are coming. Okay. And it hasn't hit yet, but we're seeing some ominous clouds.
Okay.
It's kind of a neat movement, don't you think, guys?
Sure.
We'll hear some of that probably and be back with the Lafayette String Quartet or 3 of the 4 members of the group and continue to look at tonight's concert, which begins at 7:30 p.m. and it includes Laurie Sims as a guest artist on a Schumann Quintet beautiful piece. We'll be right back with the Lafayette. If you tuned in during the music, you heard the second movement from the third quartet by Dmitri Shostakovich, as played by the Lafayette String Quartet. We heard violinist Anne Elliott Goldschmidt, Sharon Stannis, all second violin, Joanna Hood, viola, and Pamela Highbaugh Aloni, cello. And 3 of the 4 women are here in the studio previewing their concert tonight. Such a beautiful recording. I'd sure like to know about the recordings you have available and the projects you've done in the past. You've already mentioned the Shostakovich cycle. Is that available currently?
Yeah, we're thinking about it. That's recordings are they're tough, and there's so many great ones out there. And if we do something, we'd like to do something very different. So we are talking about a Shostakovich cycle recording, and we're just trying to figure out what that's going to look like.
I see on another recording you brought along that you have championed the work of Kelly Marie Murphy.
Yes, she is a wonderful Canadian composer, and we performed this piece for a summer festival, and they commissioned it from Kelly Marie for their anniversary of the festival, and we liked it so much we decided to record it, and we've tried to play it as much as we can.
Do you find there's a lot of new music available to perform and add to your concerts these days?
Oh, there's always new music, and we are very interested in commissioning music as well, because we want to keep the string quartet alive and well for the generations to come, and the best way to do that is to have people now write music for it.
Are you on the faculty at University of Victoria?
Yes.
In British Columbia? Are there faculty composers that have you work with them as well?
Well, we just performed a piece by Daniel Peter Biro, a string quartet that he wrote that is based on the great Schubert G major string quartet.
So you have to know the Schubert.
No, well, you don't have to. You don't have to.
It's helpful, though. There's so many.
There's lots of little hints in it.
Luckily, we know that one. So,
very good. Well, let's talk about the Beethoven that's on the program tonight. The Opus 95 Quintet. Which number would that be?
Oh, gosh, we don't do. You know, it's funny how what is that number? It's, I'd have to work backwards.
Well, I can figure it out. Give me about 2 minutes while the rest of you talk amongst yourselves. I think 18s or.
Sure. We learned this very early on in our group.
I think it was one of the first quartets we played.
Yeah. And it's a very interesting, very compact first movement, beautiful singing, slow movement, very virile. You know, this is showing Beethoven in his most powerful, probably, time period as a composer and pianist. Third movement is just incredible. And then the last movements, you're sort of a little, it's kind of like a little dance in a way, isn't it? Fast, agitated dance.
Yes, a fast, agitated dance. We use Dubinsky's bowings in the first movement, and it's sort of controversial because it starts off very, very strong, and quartets always agonize out of how to bow this and make it strong. And Dubinsky came up with the idea of starting the whole thing on an up bow and then doing everything down bow after that. And I've had so many people, whenever we play that, come up and say, "What? Where did you get that bowing? And why are you doing that?" And it's kind of fun to be
to be on the
it's edgy.
Outside of that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very edgy.
It's that da 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 da
da da. So we start. Which happens to be quartet number 10.
Number 10.
And we're also doing the 10th Shostakovich.
Well, that's what a nice coincidence.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention, Kara.
You're welcome, Sharon. So, number 10, Opus 95. It is really concise. I remember that the 70 Opus 74s are just bigger, spread out.
Yeah. Opus 59s. That's 59, the ones. Yes, 74 and 95 are transition quartets of Beethoven.
Yeah, I meant the Rasmus.
Yes, the Rasmus. Yeah. They really are incredible.
They're beautiful. Yeah.
But here he's like, I'm going to show you how I can condense.
That's right.
And the last movement is magical. It's full of angst and a little bit of turmoil and tragedy. And then all of a sudden there's a Picardy third. And you have a coda, which goes into F major.
Yes.
Instead of F minor. Like from F minor to F major, it's kind of like, ta-da, we're going to end the piece. Right. Brightly.
Scales.
And an elevated tempo. So it kind of scurries off to the end.
Yeah.
It's really great.
I tell my students, though, if you ever need to know why you practice scales and arpeggios, it's Beethoven. That's why you practice scales and arpeggios. It's really all he wrote.
You're going to need them.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to need good ones. I'm with the Lafayette String Quartet, which performs tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall as part of the Bullock Performance Institute series. And by 7:30, I really mean 7 o'clock, because that's an opportunity to see the musicians talk about the music and maybe answer a few questions from a faculty moderator. And it's a valuable way to, you know, hear from the musicians and then see the work that they've done. It is an enormous amount of work and dedication to continue as a quartet for 33 years. I'm sure you're asked a lot how you made it work. why you're so fortunate as to have stayed together and worked together this long.
Well, I think, number one, we have a very supportive base at the University of Victoria, which allows us a little more freedom, especially as four women, to have families and personal lives, and not to just be on the road all the time. And it also gives us room to practice and learn repertoire in a way that brings it to a level that you need to be able to play as a string quartet, because let's face it, you're the only one playing your part, and you have to be at your absolute best when you perform. And also, just we're all very devoted to this medium and really, really love playing in a string quartet.
Let's hear about the Shostakovich number 10, and then we'll finish up with the Schumann.
Shosti 10, we call him Shosti sometimes, is it's cyclical in that the opening theme you're going to hear at the end of the quartet as well. And I would say the first movement, please jump in, you guys. The first movement is almost a meditative chorale in some ways, but it's a little esoteric too. There's some interjections of Ponticello with the viola solo, and but then it goes back to this beautiful chorale, which ends quite lovely. Then we have this intense, as Shostakovich can do so well, second movement that just jumps out at you and is demonic and crazy, and it gets absolutely frenetic into almost, I don't know.
Oh, it's pure violence and
ends
terror.
And ends violently. Yeah. Yeah. And then you have this beautiful third movement, slow movement, begins with a cello solo. And it's very chorale-like, and to me, it's very healing, meditative, and philosophical.
It's almost like a chaconne, because it's the same melody that keeps coming back, and he puts it in different instruments, but it's got a chordal bass behind it. It's very meditative and also incredibly moving, I think, because of the repetition and the way it keeps moving. It sort of just takes you in.
I do love that about Shostakovich, that his forms are recognizable.
Absolutely.
Right. And I appreciate that he's using frameworks that I'm familiar with, but he's so original, he doesn't need to break them.
He also uses over and over again a Jewish theme in this. Mm-hmm. And this piece was dedicated to a dear friend of his, Moshe Shmuel. I'm probably getting his name wrong, saying it wrong, Weinberg. And who was a great composer, a great, wonderful friend of Shostakovich's. And Weinberg lost many of his family in the Holocaust. And I think that this, when I play this piece, I'm very touched by the fact that Shostakovich is talking to Weinberg. You hear almost a dialogue between two men, two friends who trust each other, and you hear over and over again in the last movement, it's very feels to me like a Jewish theme, and this almost klezmer-like thing, but never joyful. It's got this, tug, like, I get it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful last movement in many ways.
And it's compact, like the Beethoven.
Yes.
It's 22 minutes long for a four-movement work.
Wow.
And but it says a lot. It packs a lot of emotions.
We started off talking about Dmitri Shostakovich's connection to Mr. Berlinsky, his friendship. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm like one person away now from really
from Shostakovich.
From Shostakovich.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a such a close trail of personhood, not just the music. Any other thoughts on how Berlinsky and Shostakovich were connected? You said he was part of the Borodin.
He was, and you really know your Borodin quartet, because you're saying Berlinsky, who was the cellist. Now, our coach was Dubinsky.
Oh, forgive me.
Yes, you're forgiven. I'm impressed, actually. Yes, we also worked with Berlinsky, but only for a short time.
Yeah, Rostislav Dubinsky was the first violinist of the quartet, And he was, we call him the father of our string quartet because he really did help us stay together and helped form us.
He came from a completely different culture, a different style, a different world of music.
Yes. Yeah. He showed up at Indiana University in the early 80s, and we were fortunate to meet him right away, Joanna, Pam, and I. And part of our education was being invited over to his home with his wife, Luba, and his mother, Mama Zhenya and Mama Bronya, who was Luba's mother. Yeah. And, you know, the evening was ping pong, a little bit of vodka, beautiful table, lovely big dinner, a little bit of vodka, stories about the Soviet Union. You know, it was
toast. A little more vodka.
But I mean, it was a phenomenal education into that tradition. And really, Shostakovich was becoming a big, hot composer in the early 80s, having just died in 1975. Mm-hmm. So we were fortunate to be able to have somebody who knew Shostakovich, had played his eighth quartet in his apartment for the first time. Dubinsky had done that with the Borden. So then once we graduated, we would make the trip from Detroit to Bloomington, Indiana, and play every piece of music that we were learning for Dubinsky. And he was phenomenal. He was encouraging, had so many insights, and it was we studied with him until his death in 1997.
Wow. And he embraced American life and
completely. He loved living in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that doesn't always happen. You know, a lot of famous composers have had great trouble adjusting.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was very, very curious always. He spoke a little bit of, you know, German, English. So when the quartet was on tour, he would reach out and talk to people. He had so much curiosity. And I think he really liked the American spirit.
Well, your chance to hear the Lafayette String Quartet, whose, quote, father was Mr. Dubinsky, is tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. They'll be performing music of Shostakovich and Beethoven. And finally, with Laurie Sims, the Schumann Quintet in E-flat major, Opus 44. This is, if you have a chance to see it, always say yes to the Schumann. Because so much Schumann on concert programs is solo piano, it can go back and forth. But this is one of the bigger, one of the more massive pieces, and it's a little different side of Schumann. I've always liked the extreme energy with which this piece gets going. Allegro brillante.
Oh yes.
Now, have you played with Laurie Sims before?
We have not.
We met her on
Monday. And you know, Laurie is a breath of fresh air. And she is not only a tremendous person, like really just the moment you meet her, you love her. But man, that woman can play the piano.
I tell ya.
She is a great pianist and a great chamber player. She listens. We are just having a blast.
This is a very happy collaboration.
Yes. We are having a great time with each other.
I bet she'd really like to see the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
We were talking about it.
That's good.
Kalamazoo, treat her really well because we are thinking about just stealing her from you.
Okay. Well, Robert Schumann, Opus 44. Is this the year of chamber music? He had a year of chamber music, right?
You know, Schumann's not our big guy. You probably know more about Schumann than we do. We've played this is the work
but
that we play.
I have to say, I switched to viola because of this piece, because it has one of the best viola solos in the slow movement ever written.
Yes.
And I remember I heard the Philadelphia String Quartet with Alan E. Glitzen playing the viola, and I just fell in love with that piece, and I wanted to play the viola because of that.
That's all the reason you needed to switch?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, well, you all have to head off to rehearse for tonight's concert. It starts at 7:30, although arriving at 7 is a great idea because you'll get to hear more stories behind the music and behind the quartet, which is the Lafayette String Quartet, together for 33 years. 33 seasons, 33 years of music. Wow.
Yeah.
thank you so much for spending the time here today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Kara.
Julie also for arranging this. Julie Little.
Julie Little helped us get together.
Fabulous. Yeah, okay. For us.
Well, I know you're going to have a terrific time tonight in your concert.
We will.
And I'm hoping to catch the moderato, this slow movement too, but I think we have enough time to hear both movements one and two.
Fantastic.
So here is an older recording, the Cleveland Quartet, and I'm assuming a very young Emmanuel Ax at the time.
Yeah. And you know, we worked with the Cleveland Quartet.
You did?
We did. They were also wonderful coaches for us for years. So we didn't get into that, but just to let you know and your listeners know, they also had a huge job informing us, helping us form ourselves, I guess.
Well, Anne, Sharon, and Joanna, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.